Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Apparently now, abortion is infrastructure. The president, who has sold his upcoming budget on infrastructure and the need to rebuild it here in the United States, has included in one of the things that he wants you as a taxpayer to fund in that budget, abortion. And with that, the possible temporary death of the Hyde Amendment. What is this amendment? Why was it so popular? And why has this president turned his back on that amendment and the unborn? Joining us to talk about the president's first detailed budget and the Hyde Amendment, Xavier Bistis. He is vice president of Democrats for Life and co-author of a column for Newsweek titled "Democrats Should Listen to Their Constituents on Taxpayer-Funded Abortion." Xavier, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
Very well. What is the Hyde Amendment, and do we know why President Biden's budget calls for taxpayer funding for abortion despite widespread support for Hyde?
So the Hyde Amendment is a rider which is typically attached to the budget every year, which is passed by Congress. And it says that you can't use any of the funds in the budget, and especially any of the funds for healthcare and specifically Medicaid, to fund abortion. And what you flag, I think, in your question is a really important one, which is, you know, we're in a funny situation where President Biden has put out this budget which doesn't include this rider, which is normally included, even though it is typically included every year since 1976. And the argument that President Biden and some of his allies are making is that abortion is healthcare and that you should make it free to low-income people. Of course, sadly, that is the stated reason, and the real reason is that, regrettably, the president and many of his allies are really in the pockets of the abortion industry, who would like more funds to go their way and don't see any value of human life.
Give us a history of the Hyde Amendment.
So the Hyde Amendment was first passed in 1976. It was passed with an overwhelming bipartisan vote, and it was actually signed into law by a Democratic president, by Jimmy Carter, who supported it very strongly. And it has a very long bipartisan history, including from, interestingly enough, Senator Biden, who in the 1990s was a very strong defender of the Hyde Amendment. And he took the position that is less common today, but actually at the time many Democratic politicians did take, which is, you know, even if you do think that abortion should be legal, you know, it shouldn't be funded by people if they have a moral opposition to that and it would violate their conscience for their tax dollars to be spent in that way. It was also included in all of the budgets passed by Obama. It was actually only very recently in 2016 that the Democratic Party decided to put in their platform that they supported free abortions for low-income people, and they wanted to repeal the Hyde Amendment. And President Biden in 2019 embraced that position as well.
Do we know what changed then Vice President Biden's mind on the Hyde Amendment, given the fact that he had been such a longtime supporter?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think it took many people by surprise, because he had always positioned himself as a moderate on life. But I think what happened was sort of a couple of things. It was, number one, in 2019, there was a real push from members of the Democratic Party, so my party, to embrace a very radical pro-abortion rights policy. And I think that was driven by money. They started spending more on the Democratic Party. Planned Parenthood spent $50 million on, you know, Democratic Party elections last year, and money talks, right? And so this is why the party is changing their platform, even though the American public doesn't support it. And secondly, I think there has increasingly been a push from, you know, abortion extremists to say not only abortion should be allowed, but abortion is a good thing which should be celebrated and which should be funded by the government because it is a good thing. And that's a little bit of an ideological shift that we've seen over the past few years, which is really quite new and quite shocking, really.
You mentioned this in passing. Where do the American people stand on taxpayer funding for abortion?
So the answer is actually fairly straightforward, and it's poll after poll, 60% of the population or more will oppose taxpayer funding of abortion. And what's really interesting is that public opinion on this matter hasn't really changed at all since the 90s. There has been a consistent supermajority of Americans who oppose taxpayer funding of abortion, because it includes not only people who are pro-life, but also some people who are pro-choice, but they, you know, respect the consciences of other taxpayers, and they say it's better for the government to be staying out of this. And what's really interesting, Todd, is that if you do segmented polling and you look at the opinions of Hispanic voters and low-income voters who are actually much more likely to be affected by the Hyde Amendment, since they're more likely to be the recipients of Medicaid, when you speak to them, they are even more likely than the rest of the population to oppose taxpayer funding of abortion. And if you listen to these voters, what you hear is, we want more funding for healthcare. We don't want free abortions, which are going to, you know, negatively impact our community.
So tell us about a bill that would permanently end the Hyde Amendment that's making the rounds in the U.S. House.
Sure. So in addition to the efforts to get rid of the Hyde Amendment, there is also a parallel effort which is trying to permanently enshrine in law through Congress permanent insurance coverage of abortion. This would obviously be a particularly bad thing because it would, you know, make it impossible for future presidents, irrespective of what they think, to put the Hyde Amendment into their budgets if Congress has legislated on it. And it's worrying because I think it's been framed really by the sponsors of this bill as this is a way to combat systemic racism and economic insecurity. They've really tied the issue of income to the issue of the Hyde Amendment. But the reality is that if we do get rid of the Hyde Amendment, what it means is low-income people being targeted for free abortions. And, you know, this is a real impact on low-income people and people of color in particular. And what we've seen, people have done studies on this, is that there have been 2 million lives saved as a result of the Hyde Amendment, because low-income people will have access to health care rather than a free abortion. And so it's really, really important that we save it, because, you know, those lives are valuable. And, you know, the progressive thing is not to reduce the populations that are struggling, but to actually provide them real help and real options rather than free abortions and reducing their families.
Make the case then, if you would, because you mentioned abortion providers targeting minority communities. How do they do it?
Yeah. So I think I would really, I guess, first of all, is I'm white, and so I would defer to the opinions of black pro-life leaders on this. But what I've heard is that there is really a sense that Planned Parenthood views its space as being minority communities. There have been studies done by the Life Issues Institute, for example, that show that 4 out of 5 of their clinics are in walking distance of minority neighborhoods. And I think their locations and their revenue streams and the fact that they say that they will provide prenatal care, but actually most of their locations don't offer prenatal care, it really reflects structural racism in society as a whole. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge that racial lens rather than trying to cover it up. And while Planned Parenthood will say that, you know, they're trying to serve people of color, the outcomes of their actions, irrespective of their intentions or their words, are that they are disproportionately impacting people of color, among whom, especially in places like New York and New Jersey, the abortion rate is much higher than it is for other communities.
You write that wealthy Americans often view abortion as a welcome solution to poverty. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so this is a tricky topic, but when you look at polling, you often find that it is the most educated and the wealthiest who support extreme pro-abortion laws and, so, you know, taxpayer funding of abortion and so on. And while many of these voters won't often voice it, and in some cases they will, the subtext of this difference in polling is that there are actually some people who do think that, you know, there are some lives which are less worth living than a life which is normal to them. And so this is why, you know, if we're thinking about groups like the disabled or the poor, people who are foster children, you will often find, you know, in the dialogue around abortion, especially online, people will say something like abortion needs to be legal so that we don't have children in foster homes, for example, or who are growing up in poorer circumstances. And because these wealthy Americans are often living in a bubble, their assumption is that these lives aren't worth living and that this is a less expensive and a more convenient solution to actually addressing the problems that these communities will face. And, you know, in some respects, they're actually, you know, they're right that it is more convenient, but it's not necessarily the right thing at all, right? You know, we want to be addressing the root causes of, you know, children going to foster homes, for example, rather than saying these are human beings that we should give up on altogether.
Finally, you call for Democrats to focus on progressive pro-life policies. What kind of policies, and how likely is that to happen?
Yeah, excellent question. And I guess I'd preface this by saying that from my perspective, and really from the perspective of a growing number of people, pro-life is the same as being progressive, right? You know, the progressive, being a progressive is about protecting the most vulnerable among us, and especially groups who are historically discriminated against, and especially disabled children. And so I think any law which is protecting preborn life is a progressive law. Obviously, at this point in time, the Democratic Party as a whole isn't going to embrace those particular laws. There are some exceptions. There are plenty of pro-life Democratic legislators, especially at the state level, especially in Louisiana and Kentucky. But I think what is more likely, what we're really hoping that the party will embrace, in addition to those laws protecting preborn life, is laws which are going to make it easier for people to support their children. So specifically, more funding for hospices for children who have a fatal fetal abnormality so that they can be cared for with dignity in a hospital and allowed to die in comfort. A second big one is more funding for prenatal care and postnatal care. And then a final big one that I would flag is action on the black maternal mortality crisis. The U.S. is unusual for the very high maternal mortality rate, especially among black women. And not very much is being done to address it. So we think these are the real issues that require government funds and require being addressed. And we are really appalled that for some people, it is a bigger priority to give free abortions to low-income people. So we're doing everything we can, and we appreciate any thoughts and prayers.
How likely do you think the current administration is to take up any of those particular policies?
Yeah, so I think we're hoping that next year in Congress, the funding for hospices for small children who have a fatal disability is something that will come up. We're hoping that Congress will be sympathetic to it. Sadly, we do think this is more likely to be led by Democratic members of Congress working in collaboration with pro-life Republican members of Congress more than it is from the Biden administration itself. Unfortunately, the White House is really not very sympathetic to talking about providing real options or reducing the root causes of abortion. And it is really because they have been hijacked in many cases by a really radical ideology, which says that abortion is a good thing. It's a form of healthcare, which is to be celebrated. So frankly, it's a really uphill battle, but we do need all hands on deck. And, you know, we need to work as much as possible with people across the aisle to make this happen.
Xavier Bissetz is Vice President of Democrats for Life of America. He's co-author of a column for Newsweek titled "Democrats Should Listen to Their Constituents on Taxpayer-Funded Abortion." You'll find a link to Democrats for Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand Archives. Xavier, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
We will be teaching a Sunday school lesson on Queen Esther on the other side of the break. Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel will be our guest. You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Brian Wolfmiller, Jack Phillips, Larry Rast, and Will Wheaton at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Registration is $150. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Christian greeting card makers, gift shop owners, laser cutters, church banner creators, ornamentalists, poster purveyors, jewelry designers, fine artists, hymn writers, wood carvers, UV bed printers, and authors all love Issues Etc. And you'll find our work at adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.